Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Coming up on the free-for-all, we're going to talk a little bit of golf, but first we're going to talk about meat, and especially Beef Johnston, the sudden darling of the golf/meat world. Coming up, free-for-all.
This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Hey, it's your good friend Jason here on the Free For All, a pre-Olympic Free For All. Starting next week from Rio, we will be coming to you live from Brazil, talking Olympics with a host of guests, including some all-star Wall Street Journal reporters and some surprises. So stay tuned, subscribe. Be part of the free-for-all party here at WSJ Digital. And joining us today is Brian Costa, who is covering the most important thing happening in the world of sports before the Olympics, I think, which is the PGA Championship, which this year is happening in the beautiful state of New Jersey. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Jason.
What is the name of the country club?
Baltusrol. Which I keep sort of bungling the pronunciation of it. The story there is, it's actually a really beautiful story. Before they had the course here, there was a man named Baltus Roll.
Uh-huh.
And he lived up in a little house here, and he was brutally murdered.
Ooh.
And so I guess to remind people of that wonderful story, they decided when they named the golf club that was built here, they turned it into one word, Baltusrol. So it is Baltusrol.
Cool story, Brian. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, somehow I don't think that's going to come up on the telecast that much. But I want to talk, before we get to the tournament itself, about this fantastic story you have in the journal where you spent a night out with one of the new darlings of men's professional golf, Andrew Beef Johnston.
Yes.
Beef. No one calls him Andrew. Everybody calls
Beef.
Him Beef.
No.
And he's got that name because he is a man of size and appetites and loves meat and had a great British Open. I think he won his first event on the European Tour this year. And you proposed to him a night on the town of some of New York's finest meats. And as a pitch goes to a subject, how warmly and quickly was this received?
I would say the pitch was devoured. he thoroughly enjoyed both the interview portion of it and just as much, maybe more so, the eating the burgers portion of it. But for him, these guys are out in New Jersey all this week, and they're at this tournament. They're not really in the city, but
yeah,
you saw a lot of players try to sneak in a little bit of time in Manhattan before things got busy here.
Yeah,
and Beef was nice enough to spend a little bit of that time with me eating beef, so it was fun.
And some real thought went into where you were going to dine. Is that correct? You weren't going to just take them to the Olive Garden in Times Square.
Yeah, no, the Olive Garden was booked, so I had to kind of get creative. I wanted to really make it like, if we're going to be a multi-stop sort of like Best of New York beef tour, I was like, well, you can't really sit down for 3 steak dinners, so that would take too long. Thought about doing a 5-stop the first, and I was like, that's a little bit ambitious. I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah.
We settled on 3 places right in a sort of confined area in Greenwich Village that are known for famous burgers, Corner Bistro,
right.
Spotted Pig, and Meta Tavern.
Yep.
And kind of hit them all off. It took us, not even 3 hours to kind of go from one to the next. So, we weren't even in a huge hurry, but sort of worked out.
Now, I wonder, and you refer to the meat sweats early on in this story, does indigestion take hold at some point in this event? I imagine you're sort of full of energy, first stop, this burger is awesome, and then by the third stop, you're kind of like, oof,
yeah,
barely talking to each other.
I think it's after number 2 when you realize you've just had 2 fairly large cheeseburgers and you've got and now you're now going to another place with a purpose of eating a burger.
Yeah.
That it starts to catch up with you.
You're not tasting these like a wine critic. You're not like taking a bite.
No. This is not like you swish it around in your mouth.
Yeah.
And spit it out into the bucket. No. This is you have to take the full burger in to get the experience, which I sort of cheated. I did not have the bistro burger, which ended up being his favorite, just because we were in a little bit of a hurry, and I have never eaten three burgers like that in my life, so I was not about to try. But I kind of regret that now, because he said that was his favorite of the three. So.
Yeah, well, inspiration for your next night out on the town.
Exactly.
We should talk a little bit about why beef is so popular, and it's not just because he's had some good results this year, but there just seems to be culturally something about golf that they like somebody who just looks like the rest of us, and beef kind of looks like the rest of us. I don't know if we can...
I think that's part of it. I mean, I think a big part of it, too, is just, like, how much he smiles and, like, stops to acknowledge everybody that, you know, some golfers, like, you know, you could shout at them for 5 minutes and be following them.
Yeah.
And maybe at the end of that 5 minutes, they'll look up and give you like a quick, like,
tip of the
point
cap
at you or like a hat, you know, but it's like they look like, you know, I'm in this zone and I can't be taken out of this. And, you know, beef is just like reveling in the attention and adulation from everybody. And he looks like, you know, he's genuinely loving being out here.
Yeah.
And you watch a lot of golfers now, and I think anybody who's played golf can understand this on some level. It's a hard game. So I think, you know, we've all looked like we're not having the most fun when we're playing golf sometimes.
Sure.
But, you know, you look at him and there's like a joyfulness about the way he goes about it and just his personality. Jason Day actually had a really good quote when asked about Beef this week. He said, he looks like somebody you want to go to a pub with and hang out with, even if you don't drink. So,
And we should say, I mean, isn't it fair to say that golf has become more athletic, at least in appearance, over the past decade or so? That Tiger Woods ushered in this era of the very sort of sinewy, flat front panted, muscular golfer. And Beef is a little bit of a throwback to the Craig Stadler era.
I think he is more of an anomaly now in appearance than he would have been 15 years ago, that's for sure.
He doesn't smoke, though. He's not out there like the mechanic smoking cigars.
No, you know, it's funny. I was just out this morning walking briefly alongside John Daly as he was starting his round. And,
and
I saw him just like, you know, right off the green as his way into putt, just sort of lights up a cigarette, which somebody told me.
Now, does he just get wild cards to the PGA? Is that how it works with him now?
There are all sorts of exemptions. You know, some of them for past champions, some of them for invites. So I think the PGA, I'm struggling to recall on memory exactly what all the PGA's qualifying criteria are. They're all a little bit different for every major, but you will see a lot of these guys who have either, you know, won these majors in the past, or, you know, have other sorts of exemptions that they get into. But honestly, at this tournament, it's less so than the others. It really is a large and strong field here because of the way they sort of select people.
Does Daly look happy and tanned and rested, or does he look like he's going to keel over any second?
You know, he looked happy enough when I saw him, but
it was early,
so it's the start of a long, humid day, so maybe check back on that one.
I mean, would you say, it seems to me, you know, and you obviously are much more involved in the sport than I am, from the outside, that he still is like a top 10 U.S. golf personality in terms of just like your name and visual recognition of people.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think that you know, people have compared him to Beef.
Yeah.
Beef to him, you know, saying, is he that going to be that kind of figure?
Yeah.
And I think everyone sort of hopes that he will be, because even Jason Day was saying, like, golf needs personalities like that.
Yeah.
But he's got to win. You know, John Daly won.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good. He wasted a lot of talent, but he still had a lot of talent. I mean, he was good enough to be more than just sort of a sideshow, which is
how he is now. How is Beef off the tee?
You know what? I got to be completely honest with you. In the course of reporting that story, I did not look up his, stats or characteristics as a golfer.
But he doesn't have the otherworldly driver reputation that Daly had.
Yeah. No. Daly had something else that you knew about him that was
It was Babe Ruthian
and unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tragic and, comic, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. And still is. I mean, Daly can still crank it, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems there's a never-ending shortage, never-ending supply of John Daly profiles and stories. The man just, I don't know. The colorful counts for a lot in the sport of golf.
It does.
You know, it really does. I was surprised to read in your piece that when you went to the Spotted Pig, which is a British-inspired gastropub, he was stopped quite a bit. Like, customers recognized him?
So, the guy... financial guy he is staying with this week, who I think had a number of friends and family there at the bar area.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I think mostly were people who knew
they had a heads up
to be there,
right.
And kind of had a heads up. But he did. I mean, we were on the street outside Minetta Tavern.
Yeah.
And somebody came up to him and said, hey, you know, could I have a picture? I think Corner Bistro, there was somebody else that recognized him on the way out. So,
The beard is a good characteristic, you know, a visual signifier.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not someone where you're like, wait a second, is that Jason Duffner or is that Steve?
Right. Is that Charles Schwartzel?
Right.
Brian, before we get to the PGA, I want to ask you a little bit about sort of the fallout from Rio and that, you know, the golfers have taken some grief, especially the elite level guys for bowing out of Rio for a variety of reasons, but mostly because of concerns about Zika. Is that cloud still following these guys around or has that kind of issue been buried after the British now?
No, I don't think so. I think it's been buried. I mean, I think the reason it hung over for a while is there was this long period of uncertainty where it was just a lingering question and nobody, you know, all these guys were like, you know, not 100% either way. So really the month of June, I feel like right up until the first week of July when the field was set.
Right.
I think that hurt the sport because if they had just come out from day one and announced like, here's who's playing, here's who's not, there would have been a big story then, but then like people would have been like, okay, moved on. But it was a slow trickle of like, one guy says he's not going, then another guy says, I'm not sure, I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So it became this saga that I think ended with more guys withdrawing than even people expected. Because we did expect that not everybody would go. I mean, you know, I think there were always going to be some guys who weren't totally into it.
Yeah.
But the rise of Zika sort of becoming a bigger concern there, I obviously played a role. People could debate, well, is that an excuse or whatever? I think it's more complicated than that. I think that for these guys, it's always sort of a risk-reward decision, and it's a different risk-reward than most athletes who are going to Rio. And so,
for sure. Question. It doesn't loom in their lives in the way that, say, if you were a javelin thrower, you know, it's just a totally different equation. Who is the highest ranked golfer who is going?
Bubba Watson.
Oh, Bubba Watson top 10 in the world?
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah,
okay.
Bubba is the, I don't know exactly where he's in the world rankings right now off the top of my head, but he is the, he was the number one ranked golfer in the men's field after obviously the withdrawals of Spieth, Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day. I want to say Bubba's fifth in the world right now, but
yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about PGA for a moment, which is a lot of forecasting for Dustin Johnson, who's had a very good year, of course. A lot of predictions for Rory, who's had kind of a, you know, even odd year relationship with the PGA. I think he won in 12 and 14.
Yep.
What are you feeling heading in? I mean, we're here day one today.
It's really funny. I was saying this morning. I've never been more confident in predicting that Rory McIlroy was going to win a major than I was this week. And sure enough, he comes out and bogeys three of his first seven holes, I think, to be three over early in his round. So he looks, just from the first morning, looking shaky with his putter, which usually doesn't, you know, he's always the kind that if he just putts like average level, he's amazing because of what he does, you know, with the rest of his game. But so far, I don't think his putting has been average level. So
what's the heat situation out there, Brian? Because I walked past one of those outdoor temperature signs in Manhattan just now, 95 on West 47th Street this morning.
You know, those signs don't really do it justice because the air, I mean, it's been hot. We've been in a heat wave now in the Northeast for a little bit.
Yeah.
But the humidity, it hasn't come on quite like it has like this today. So this is a fantastic day to enjoy the air-conditioned media tent and the beauty of television.
Now that you've done the circuit, do you prefer, you know, the heat of the summer or sort of the wild wind, rain, horizontal craziness of you know, the British Open?
Can I compromise and take the spring air of
the
Augusta
Masters?
National?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, and the British Open was cold this year. I mean, there were some days where, I mean, people walking around, and I actually bought a ski hat in the pro shop at the last minute as a sort of impulse buy because everyone else had one.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, it's funny because these two majors have been crammed together in a three-week stretch because of the Olympics, and they could not be more different in terms of the climate, the type of golfer, you know, used to take the win. I mean, it's just polar opposites.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's come up with regards to the Olympic conversation is, like, in addition to the fact that these guys had this, you know, obligation to consider with the Olympics, there's also a Ryder Cup in Minnesota this year, which is, you know, you don't have to tell a golfer that the Ryder Cup is important. I mean, this is a pretty crammed calendar for them in 2016.
It's really crammed. And part of that, too, I know that, like, the American public doesn't get super jazzed about the FedEx Cup.
That's true, yeah.
And the, you know, end of PGA Tour season. But, you know, those are big events for those guys starting late August.
Yeah.
You know, 4 week stretch there's a $10 million prize at the end of that for the winner. So, you know, those, that's, you know, for the top players who will sort of qualify at events through all those, you know, you're looking at going, you know, through, you know, not exactly having a ton of time off in late August and early September either, and then going right into a Ryder Cup. So, yeah, I mean, for the guys who, you know, are going to Rio and are going to be in those FedEx Cup events and the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're talking about from the start of the U.S. Open in June to the Ryder Cup at the end of September. I know it's just golf. It's not, you know, football. They're not, you know, getting banged up out there, but it's the grind.
It's exhausting, and it's hot, and it's, you know, travel and all that. You know, we all can, you know, I mean, I know it's not like they're triathletes, but it's something. Can I talk a little baseball with you for a second?
Sure.
I want to ask you about the Yankees being sellers and what that dynamic is like, because that's, you know, it's happened before recently, but it's unusual to see them unload a top-tier player like Aroldis Chapman, you know, just months after picking him up, and just, you know, what that dynamic is like.
Yeah, it's a weird time for them. You know, nobody's used to it. But I think what the last few years have done, really, last, going back to, say, 2013 and there on, it's really made people realize that, you know, nobody's clinging to this idea of, you know, maybe the glory years are still going to just continue here. If we could only make one more big signing, if we could just do this. I think everyone around the Yankees and their fans at this point have to recognize that they've got a lot of work to do to try to build the next great Yankees team, not just a one-year team, but as sort of a multi-year type of thing like they had going. I mean, no one would expect that they're going to find another, you know, Jeter and those guys that are going to last that long. We may never see something like that with that kind of longevity again. But so I think in some way, I actually think where they've been in the standings this year is in some ways liberating for them because, you know, Brian Cashman is always sort of in the spot where he has to try to rebuild without ever rebuilding. You know, they have to get younger.
Yep.
They have to put the priority in the future. And
yep.
They have to be able to say with a straight face that they're contending this year. They cannot just punt on that.
Right.
So I think in some ways it may be a good thing in the long term because they needed the freedom to try to make the move to bring in more young talent.
Yeah.
Brian, who's a player or what's a team that, you know, if you're flipping around at home and or on MLB TV that, you know, you want to always check out because they're doing interesting things?
You know, I know this is sort of an obvious answer, but I still think that the Cubs are just the story of this.
Yeah.
This year.
They've come back down to earth a tiny bit. Is that correct?
They definitely have. Yeah. But I also think that makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
It reminds you that for all the hype and all the talent they have, nothing is guaranteed. I mean, they know better than anybody that you really cannot count on winning the World Series until the last out and that's over with. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I think it's one of those truly, you know, sort of national teams in baseball that has a large following. And I think it's something that's really going to, you know, drive interest, you know, going into the playoffs and there beyond. But, you know, you've got other teams, too. I mean, the San Francisco Giants are doing their every two-year thing so far.
Yeah.
So this is an even year, which by baseball rules means they will win the World Series.
Yeah.
So, it'll be fun to watch.
Did you watch the Hall of Fame ceremony?
I did not. No. Did you?
I did. I got sucked into it. I had it on. My kids were away, so you know, it's just TV max out time. And Piazza's speech was great. Griffey was great. But I really love just watching the old guys. But I have one suggestion for Cooperstown, Brian.
All right.
Too many sunglasses. I mean, I know it's sunny as hell there, and you've been up there for that ceremony, I'm sure. Really, really bright, bright, bright day outdoors in Cooperstown. But I want to see the guys' eyes. You know, they're all wearing these crazy Oakley sunglasses and stuff like that. I want to see Ricky Henderson's eyes. I want to see, you know, what they guys look like. You know who looks amazing, by the way? I looked it up. Robin Yount still looks 35 years old. He's 60. He's 60.
Yeah, some of these guys age better than others. I actually have not been to the ceremony up there. I've been to Cooperstown at other times of the year, but never for the actual ceremony. But you're right. I mean, there's something about, like, you know, there's a reason why, like, you know, if a president is giving a speech somewhere outdoors, he's not doing it in shade. You know what I mean? It's just like you kind of want to look into their eyes a little bit.
I just want to see the human connection. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I hear that.
It is really a pretty cool event, I have to admit. I'm a little cynical about the Hall of Fame voting process, but it's really
neat. You know what? I'll say this. It is a great museum and place to visit. I mean, it's a really cool little town in upstate New York.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much debate about, like, who should be in, who should be out, that people sort of lose sight of that. It's a historic, you know, a history museum. You know, it's not, you know, the bronzes and the busts of the guys that are in there are really, you know, cool to see, but there's a whole other larger part of it that has so many cool little artifacts. And honestly, like, even as someone who's covered baseball, I've learned a lot about the history of the game just by going there.
For sure. And I think also partly that, you know, the second we stop arguing about it is the second that people stop caring. And so as long as people are arguing about it, just a last question for you on the Hall of Fame, Poppy, yes, no. I think, you know, a couple years ago I would have said no because just DHs doesn't happen. But now, right?
For who?
Ortiz.
Ortiz?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
You know, I also think that, like, you know, I'm a believer, too, and that, like, there are some guys that you just, when you mention their name and think of, like, what they've done and the, like, their stature in the game. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And there are
yeah.
some guys who you look at all the numbers and you can make the most detailed scientific case for where they're at. And you just look at them and you're like, okay, I guess, but I've never really, you know, when I hear them think of that guy, I don't think.
That's so funny you should say that, because, like, they were doing the introductions and they bring out all these players. And what I really loved about the old players is that they were out of sequence. There was no sort of rhyme or reason. There may have been, but I don't know what it was. So it was a guy from the 70s and a guy from the 80s and a guy from the 30s. And, you know, it was like it was all over the place. So you'd have, like, stuff like, you know, and here comes Mike Schmidt, and here's Sandy Koufax, and here's Jim Bunning, and here's Burt Blyleven. Like, and no disrespect to Burt Blyleven, but, you know, in the shadow of Sandy Koufax, it does stand out as a little bit weird. All right, Brian, we got to wrap it up. Stay out of the sun. Make sure to drink as much fluid as possible. Don't get the meat sweats. And if you haven't checked out Brian, Brian's extraordinary, and there's video, piece, about following beef in the city. It's great stuff, and follow all of Brian's coverage at wsj.com/sports through the PGA Championship, which concludes Sunday. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Love this show? Check out others by visiting wsj.com/podcasts. See our full selection under programs.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.